and welcome to another episode of Adoption Hacks. I'm Candace Laycock. I want to tell you that in a couple weeks, Callie and I are going to do a Q&A episode. So we want all of your questions. Anything you got, send it our way. There are three ways to send in questions. You can DM us on Instagram or Facebook, email us at adoptionhacksinfo@gmail.com, or the most fun way is to send us a voice memo. To do that, go to anchor.fm/adoptionhacks. I'll put a link in the episode description and send us a voice memo that way, and we will include it in our episode. Today on the show, it is such an honor to have JT Olson from the Both Hands Foundation. JT started Both Hands 12 years ago, and it is an incredible way to fundraise for an adoption and also help a local widow who needs help around her home. If you are fundraising for an adoption, this is a must listen. Hear the heart behind this organization and get inspired to do your own project. And even if you are not currently fundraising, this episode is worth the listen to hear JT's own story of loss and how that led him to create Both Hands. Here's our interview. Okay, welcome JT to the Adoption Hacks podcast. It is such an honor to have you. I have so much respect for you and Both Hands, and I'm so excited for our listeners to hear more about that today. Welcome.
Thank you, Candace. It's an honor to be here. I love talking about Both Hands.
Yeah, me too. Can you tell us, just sum it up in a nutshell, what is Both Hands?
Well, there's a long version and a short version. Yeah, Both Hands, what we do is we help families raise money for adoptions. And we do it by helping them organize a work project centered around a widow's house. So it's a perfect execution of James 1:27, where they're serving widows and orphans, and it's really quite beautiful.
Yeah, that's wonderful. How did this begin?
Okay, now that's my favorite story. Okay, I mean, I was on the board of Bethany Christian Services here in Nashville, Tennessee, just the local board, and 1 year I was in charge of the fundraiser, and I said, let's do a golf fundraiser. So we do a golf fundraiser. And it wasn't the kind where you pay a fee to get in. It was the kind where you recruit about 20 people. And you ask them all to send letters out to their friends and family, asking them to support them, you know, while they golfed. Sometimes it's a 100-hole golf thing, or sometimes just for the round. And it's important to understand that concept to get how it started. So I sent my letters out to my friends. A friend of mine, who he and I were in a Bible study together, he sends my letter back to me, does not include a check. He just took a magic marker and he scribbled across my letter. He said, JT, if you told me you were working on a widow's house, I might sponsor you, but you're just golfing. Nice cause, but not my money. Now, that kind of hurt my feelings a little bit, but at the same time, I thought the overriding emotion was, wow, what a great idea. And I never could get the idea out of my head, Candace. Whenever I saw a 5K or a golf tournament after that, I kept thinking, you know, if all those people were working on a widow's house, would that be more impressive? But it wasn't until a couple years later, I'm in church and I run to a friend of mine. I hadn't seen him in a couple months. I said, what's up, Don? He said, I'm adopting 4 kids from Moldova. He's already got 3 kids at home. And I said, what happened? He said, well, I was on a mission with Sweet Sleep, delivering beds to orphanages, fell in love with this little boy, George, started the adoption process when we got home and found out that George has 3 siblings. And Don says, we're not going to break up the siblings. And, well, honestly, that resonated with me, because the backstory on this is probably just as important as the other story. It took me back to when I was 12 years old. I was living on a farm in northeastern Iowa. And I remember one weekend my mom and dad left to celebrate their 16th wedding anniversary. And us kids were kind of farmed out to different places. And I remember Saturday afternoon late being brought home. The neighbors brought us home. I'd played in the barn all day that day with my friends, so I was dirty. I had to go in the basement to change. My other brother went in the front door. And I remember sitting in our basement on this chair, bending over and lacing my boots. And my brother comes down the basement stairs. And I looked up at him. I said, our mom and dad home. And he looked at me and just said, mom and dad are dead. Wow. And I said, what? And he said, mom and dad are dead. They were killed in a car accident an hour ago. And he turned around and walked back upstairs. And he had just found out himself. I mean, he was just processing it himself. And I remember hitting the floor. I was in the 7th grade. I was a 12-year-old. And I remember hitting that cold cement floor and crying and wailing all by myself. I just, it was I know what it's like to be an orphan. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to wonder what's going to happen to us, who's going to take care of us. I know what it's like. And I also know what it's like to be rescued, because 3 months before the accident, my mom and dad and my aunt and uncle, my mom's sister and husband, they changed their wills. That if anything would happen to one of the couples, the other couple would take them. Well, my aunt and uncle lived in a very nice suburb of Milwaukee, and they had 3 kids of their own. They took all 5 of us in. So I know what it's like to have someone come up and say, we got you.
Yeah.
You know, it may not always be pretty, but we got you. And I mean, all of a sudden it took me back to the hallway in church. And when Don said, we're not going to break up the siblings, I mean, I'm the just right guy to say that to, yeah. You know, because I'm the recipient of someone who said, we're not going to break up these siblings. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at John. And I remember so clearly thinking, here's a man who has a faith that I envy. I want to trust God like that, mm-hmm. You know, and I looked at Don, and by then we'd adopted, our 5th child adopted. And I said, Don, how much is this going to cost? He said, oh, they're telling us between $70,000 and $80,000. And I said, do you have any idea how you're going to raise that money? He said, no. And I said, I think I got an idea. And so Don and I got together. We recruited about 13, 14 friends. We all sent letters out to everyone we knew saying, you know, would you sponsor me for the day while I work on this widow's house? Mm-hmm. All the money I raise is going to go towards the cost of this adoption of these 4 kids from Moldova. I mean, we found a widow in Nashville here who needed help. We got all the supplies donated because everyone we talked to loved the idea. Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't? Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, it was an awesome day. And I think about 35 people showed up that day. It was so much fun. Yeah. I mean, everyone just walked around smiling. And when it was over, we had raised. By the time everything had come in, about 3 or 4 months later, I think we'd raised about $70,000.
Oh, my goodness.
It's almost like God was winking at me going, JT, dude, what'd you expect? It's widows and orphans. Come on. But that was the first project. So that kind of describes how it all began and gives people an idea of really what the model is. It's an amazing story. Yeah.
That is truly amazing. It just connects on so many levels. It's so cool.
Yeah, it is.
And you mentioned James 1:27. I know that's a big part of what drives you. And so tell us just how that pushes you every day for this mission.
Well, you know, I think about it. I mean, I was 12 years old when I, you know, learned what it's like not to have a mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And I also learned what it's like to be, you know, welcomed into another family. And it's just, God has a way of taking your pain and turning into your platform. Mm. And, you know, I think back on my aunt, my dad's sister, who was a widow. She came and took care of us on the farm after they passed away. And so I was being taken care of by a widow. I know what it's like to, you know, rub elbows and rub shoulders with people who are in that situation. In my life, the jobs I've had, I had a job selling books door to door as a college student. I ran into so many people, and some of them were widows. And just sitting down and talking to them, seeing their loneliness. I mean, it's not easy. And it's 14 million of them in the United States. I mean, they're not all desperate. I mean, some of them are very well cared for, but there's some that really just need to be loved on. And you combine those two, I just think it's a powerful, powerful message. The whole first couple of chapters of James, I mean, the whole book of James is powerful. Mm-hmm. But that first chapter, wow, that just kind of lays it in there.
Yeah, it's very clear. You don't have to wonder what's being said.
Yeah, and it's not a suggestion. It's not, by the way, you know, if you got some time, you know, like on a Saturday, if you could do this, that'd be awesome. I mean, it's pretty clear, like, hey, widows and orphans.
Yeah.
These are important to me. Mm-hmm. These are the apple of my eye. Mm-hmm. You know.
And I think another piece of what you do that's so amazing is bringing that community together. And just for that widow to see, I'm not alone. Look at God's family that's caring for me. And for the adoptive family to see, like, how many people want that family to come together.
Oh, yes. I mean, some of these things when I started, I hadn't really thought through. I was just trying to do a project. I was just trying to raise some money for my friend. but I mean, it's just the way people come around. When people join the team, they become part of that child's story.
Yeah.
You know, forever. I mean, they have a vested interest in that child. And you know what? The family has a community around them that supports that adopted child and probably their other children too. And it's really it's really amazing. And then when those people send those letters out, the circle gets bigger. It's like they think, oh, my friend's working on this project. He's serving a widow and it's for one of their friends. I mean,
right.
It's a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. But you're right. And what you said earlier about, we have found that people have a tendency to give more money when you're working on a widow's house. And if you just send them a link that says, hey, you know, would you help me raise money for this thing? It's
JT, these stories and this topic are things I'm sure you talk about every single day. But yet, as I see your face, as I hear your voice, I see how fresh this is, how real this is for you.
Part of it is, you know what part of it is? Part of it is I just feel so fortunate. I get so fortunate that I have been able to take what's been painful and turn it into something that's beautiful. And hasn't been years of, from the time I started both hands, I was, the accident happened when I was 12 years old. I started both hands when I was 52. Mm-hmm. That's 40 years. Mm-hmm. I didn't spend it in the desert. It wasn't like I was suffering. But 40 years is a significant number in the Bible. I mean, that's used a few times. And it's almost like God was saying, I was 52 and God was saying, JT, this is what it's all been about.
Wow.
Just tee it up and swing, man, because this is going to be fun.
That's really powerful.
Yeah. My wife always says this, God, so many times God takes your pain and makes it your platform.
Yeah.
And I just think about, just so fortunate. Yeah. I get emotional telling this story and talking about it all because I just feel so fortunate that God gave me a chance to do something that it's fun for me. It's not hard, but it also makes an impact. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes an impact.
I love talking to you. You're great.
You're an encouragement to me.
Okay, so for an adopted family who's listening and thinking, this is what I've been looking for. This is an amazing way to fundraise and to help a widow as well. Let's talk about some specifics with projects. What does a typical project look like? What are you doing for these widows?
A typical project, at least the way I coach families, and keep in mind, every family that gets that applies and we accept to work with, I coach each one of them individually.
Okay.
And it involves three phone calls, and I just coach them through the whole thing. We've got an unbelievably effective toolkit or project manual, however you want to look at it, that really does spell it all out mm-hmm. for people. Over the 12 years, we have evolved. It has evolved into. The only way I can express it is award-winning, extremely effective. I mean, it's really good. And that's not me saying it. That's other people who've used it, you know. Yeah. But the first thing they got to do is with the widow, I coach them. I say there's four things you should focus on. Simple stuff. Painting, cleaning, decluttering, and landscaping. Mm-hmm. You know, a good rule of thumb is don't do anything that makes you have to pull a permit from the city council or anything like that. Simple stuff. It blesses the widow tremendously because so much of the stuff that happens is they just get behind.
Yeah.
And then things stack up and then this stacks up. And after a while, and I understand so much easily why it happens, but they just throw their hands up and say, I can't do it. You know, so painting, cleaning, decluttering, landscaping. There's also a great thing about those things is it's not a lot of money. You're not investing in a lot of money mm-hmm. in supplies because most of that, all that stuff you can have donated, especially yeah. when someone finds out you're working on a widow's house.
Right. And so do you coach then families to go to their local hardware stores and places and ask for donations?
Oh yeah, and we've got the letter with our tax ID number on. They go in and present it. I mean, the whole process. We've got it. It's all put together. So,
and then how do the families get support from their friends and family?
Well, there's two ways. The first wave I tell them to do is you want to recruit a team. You can't do this alone. You know, your goal is to send out a total of 600 letters.
Okay.
Okay. And so I always tell the family they should do 100 of those letters, because their letters will fall into the laps of people who know them. Mm-hmm. And they will be most effective. The other 500 letters, you got to get those out. So what you need to do is recruit a team of friends. And these friends, I call them the core team. They're the ones who commit to two things. They will work on the widow's house, and they will send letters to their friends asking them to sponsor them for the day. And the letter's already written, so they don't have to write the letter. We've got a pretty good template of a letter. The only thing that you change are the, you know, about the family, the adoptive child, and the widow's name. All that changes. Mm-hmm. But that's all laid out and everything. And that's the way you recruit your friends to be on the team. Okay. And those people, they become a part of that child's life, and it's pretty cool. And then the other way they get their friend support is if they're not on the core team, they're going to probably get a letter in the mail. Say, hey, you know, we're doing this for our adoption. Would you sponsor us? You know, and then a lot of times, I mean, it's just amazing. It's you know, people just, they love the concept.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're working on a widow's house, raising money for an adoption, and the fact that both hands doesn't take anything out for our expenses, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, so 100% goes to the family in the form of a grant. So,
wow, that's amazing. And how many are in that core team typically?
It varies with the families, but I encourage them to shoot for 15. They can do it with 10, you know, but not everyone hits 600 letters, but that's really the game plan. Mm-hmm. And some people have 20 or 25 people on the team.
Yeah. And then how do you connect with widows in the area?
Well, that's up to the family. Okay. Clearly I'm not going to assign a widow to them without them having any say in it. Mm-hmm. We figured that out really early in the process. You know, I can't tell somebody in Oklahoma, yeah, you have to work on this widow's house. I just, you know, every family has to set your eyes on the project. If you're going to commit to do a project, you're the one who has to decide, yes, me and my team can do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that. But I coach families in one of my phone calls of here's how you go about finding a widow. And if they will do those things, mm-hmm. pretty well. I mean, I tell them first go into your own church, and then I tell them ask your core team members, because you know your core team members going to be from a lot of different areas of your life: church, work, fun, school, you know, mm-hmm. sports teams, whatever. And those people will know widows. I also tell them to look for neighboring churches. I also encourage them to look at places like the first responders, those offices. You know, a lot of times they'll have somebody who served their whole life, and they retired or something, and they may have a widow now, or Meals on Wheels, hospice. There's a lot of places to find where widows live.
And then what type of adoptive families do you work with? Domestic, international, everybody?
We're a small religious nonprofit in the state of Tennessee. So the market we're serving is Christian families, Christian couples, traditional marriage, and international or domestic.
Okay.
Is what we can do. We're able to do a few products each year that have to do with post-adoptive care. Those are a little bit more difficult to raise money for because, you know, the child's already home, and there's a lot of challenges with that, but you know, we were able to do a few of them with some families. And we also do orphan care projects. That is for just organizations who want to raise money.
Okay.
We've done 1,072 projects in 44 states.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I mean, 1,072 in 44 states. That's a lot. And we've raised.
What time frame?
12 years.
12 years. Okay.
Well, if you count that first project, it'd be 13 years because I did that one. That first project was, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, that was in 2007. We've raised $13.5 million.
My goodness.
And Candace, that's important because people need to hear that because they need to realize this works.
Yeah.
I mean, it really works. We've done this many times and we know what works.
Yeah.
And we can help a family we can guide a family through this. Of the 1,072 projects, about 10% of those have been orphan care projects. In other words, you don't have to be adopting to do a both hands project. Because you got to admit, this is a pretty cool model. You know, I mean, but we just, because of our mission statement and the fact that just how we've decided to focus our efforts, we don't do projects for the Boy Scouts or, you know, or muscular dystrophy. That those are great. It's a great model to do it for that, but we don't. We just focus on organizations that focus on orphans or foster care kids. So if a Sunday school wants to do a project and they just want, they got 15 people in Sunday school, they want to do something together, they can raise money for an orphanage or raise money for their adoption fund, or maybe they've got a foster care home that's connected to their church, or maybe they've got, I don't know, post-adoption care. I don't know. But they can do a project. And we call that an orphan care project. Sometimes people do a project for an adoption fund at a church. This is a great way to raise money for an adoption fund. We've got one group out of Georgia. They did it for 6 years straight.
Wow.
And two of those years, they raised over $100,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. And you know what? They raised so much money for their adoption fund at their church. They had to start to use it. They had to go to churches outside, people outside their church.
My goodness.
You talk about, and every project they did, and every time they did a project, they would serve 6 to 8 widows. I think one of the years they served 11 widows.
Wow.
Because they had the whole team at church, and the whole church just left, you know, and, and they, it's amazing.
That is incredible. That I didn't realize you guys had gone into that too. That's so cool. What a great idea. And wow. Yeah. It's just limitless. That's so cool.
Yes. I have a vision someday it'll be on little small college campuses. You know how these little campuses, there's 900 to 1500 kids at a small town in middle of Iowa or Indiana. It's a small school, little town, but just imagine 15, 20 kids from that college student serving a widow in that little town and the money going towards an orphanage or some kind of thing that helps the foster care kids in that county. I mean, this could be big. You know, it just fires me up.
I'm fired up too. I'm ready to go. Oh, that's so exciting. Okay, I know that this is probably hard to answer because it depends so much, but if a family is doing the work and doing what you suggest and how you're coaching them, what's kind of the average of what you see a family be able to fundraise?
Oh, that's not hard. Yeah, it's going to be between 50 and 16,000.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. I think our average in 2020 was 16,500, but honestly, there was some grant programs. We had some unbelievable story where we had some people put some money aside for grants for our families, and we were able to wanted to give money to families who've been affected by the virus. So their project wasn't as big, you know, so we were able to give some grants. So the average was a little bit up. But the average is it's right around 15,000.
Okay.
So it's pretty good. I mean, that's more than a spaghetti dinner. Right. You know, and plus you're serving a widow and you're doing something fun with your friends all day.
Right. Exactly.
So
at what point can a family apply to do a project? Do they have to have their home study done, or what stage do they need to be in?
Home study done.
Okay.
When the home study's done, shoot us that application. You can go on our website and find the application.
You know, and I'll just say I'm on a lot of these like adoptive Facebook pages or groups and whatever. And anytime fundraising is brought up and if somebody mentions that they did a both hands project, I have never heard a negative story or comment. It's always, we did this. It was awesome. It was incredible. And we were able to fundraise, a ton. So I think it's just incredible. Like you said, it's extremely effective.
You know, it's the most irresistible nonprofit in America.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it.
It's widows and orphans. And both hands doesn't pick anything out. But, you know, what you said about people's responses, I just, when I started this, one of the number one thing I want to do to make number one was customer service. Mm-hmm. And just make sure our families had everything they need, because I believe that if we help our families have awesome projects, and if they don't raise as much money as they want to, just make sure it's not on us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's because something they didn't, maybe didn't sign enough letters or how they chose to do things, which is up to them.
Right.
But it really has paid off. I love to see those comments, and oh, it's fun to be part of 1,126 kids who are no longer orphans.
Yeah. Amen. That's good. Okay. For people who are listening, who maybe have already adopted, but they just love what you're doing and want to support you, support both hands. Is there a way to do that?
Yeah. Glad you asked. You know, we don't take any money out of the money we help families raise. So yeah, the onus to pay our bills, our salaries and overhead, because we have, you know, we got 4 full-time people on staff, a part-time person. And, you know, if one thing I've learned in this business, if you want to have good people, you got to pay them.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't work for free. And part of our, you know, we need to raise funds for our operations. And so they can send money in. We have some monthly donors. We have some quarterly donors. If they really want to have the whole experience, honestly, they could do an orphan care project. And we don't care an orphan care. It's more of a vision project. That's the third kind of product we do. When someone comes to us and says, we love what Both Hands does, we want to help you raise money, how can we do it? And I'll say, just do a vision project. It's the same model, but the money raised goes towards the operations of Both Hands.
Oh, okay.
And so that's one of those checks you write that you know 100% is going towards operations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, people always say, well, how much is going towards operations? We can say, yeah, 100% of this check is going towards operations.
Yeah, that's cool.
But that keeps us going to serve more widows and orphans.
Yeah, right. That's awesome.
Well, you know, every time I tell the story, and sometimes I have a chance to talk to a church or something like that, and I have a chance to kind of give the 25 or the 30 minute version of the whole story, because there's so much. If you told me, if I didn't live it myself, my wife says this. She said, if we didn't live this ourselves, I'd swear it wasn't true.
Yeah.
so many of the things that have happened that have led us to where we are. But yeah, every time I would tell the story, someone would always come up and say, you should write a book.
Mm.
And so we did.
Nice.
A couple years ago, we came out. It's called The Orphan, the Widow, and Me. People besides my family have said it's a good book. So, you know.
Hey,
I don't know.
It's good enough. Yeah. Okay.
It's in its sixth printing. Because the first 5 were blurred. Just kidding. That's a joke. No. And we've got some great books. If people want them, they can go on the website. It's bothhands.org.
Okay.
I think I can't remember if it's bothhandsbook.com. If they go to bothhands.org, they can contact us and we can hook them up with a book if they want to.
Okay.
Pick one up. It's also, I think, on Amazon.
Okay, perfect. I'm on your website, and if you go to store, it's the first thing that comes up.
Oh, okay.
So, oh, and free shipping.
That's how we roll. What are you talking about? There you go.
And I'll ask you this, and if nothing comes to mind, that's fine. But in your years of doing this, or even just recently, has there been a story that has stood out to you?
Yeah, I saw it. I was at a project in the first part of January. You know, whenever there's a project here in Middle Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
and I happen to be in town for the weekend, I try to make it over there on Saturday morning just to greet everybody, to meet the widow and kind of, you know, help them pray and kick the thing off.
Mm-hmm.
First weekend in January, first or second weekend in January, there was a project, and I went over there and I had a chance to visit the widow for about 10 minutes. Everyone else was outside because of the virus, you know, they're trying to protect her and everything. But I had a chance to go in with the person who was running the project. And so then she left. So it was just the widow and I talking. And, you know, I told her, I had a chance to tell her about Both Hands and find out about her life. And, you know, afterwards I said, at the end, I just said, well, I just want to thank you for letting us work in your house. And she stopped. She said, thank me. She said, thank you. She said, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't think anybody cared anymore. And when she said that, I thought, how many, you know, a couple of thoughts went through my mind is, today there is a ray of sunshine shining on that yellow house on Crockett Road, and joy is being brought, and it's being brought by a both hands team. It fired me up. It also made me realize how many widows are across this country that feel like they've been forgotten.
Yeah.
And it really just makes me think, we got to do something. And it's not that hard. People just got to get out and see them.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, I get stories like that all the time. And it's just, but that was kind of powerful, being mm-hmm. right there.
And you're right. It's not hard. And unfortunately, I think our focus is just elsewhere. And so I love that by highlighting these situations, you're able to bring that awareness of it's really not that hard. And also the need is great. And just hearing that, you know, hearing that one woman's story and thinking how many more need to see God's hands and feet being used.
Yeah. I feel very, very blessed. I don't feel like I've worked a day in 12 years. It's just so much fun because I get to talk to people like you. I get to talk to families who are adopting. I get to talk to widows who are being served. And I always think the best part about the one of the cool things about this program that I didn't realize was, I mean, it's a great team building exercise, but you know, even if a family doesn't raise as much as they want, mm-hmm. they still got to serve a widow. Mm-hmm. And the dads and moms I've talked to after the project was done and they didn't hit their goal, none of them are mean or mad. They're just going, JT, oh, it was an awesome day. Let me tell you what happened with this widow. And they love it.
Yeah. It's not like a spaghetti dinner. Oh, great. We have all this spaghetti left over. It's still an amazing thing that happened.
Thank you for what you do.
Yeah, well, thank you. We're blessed to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for sharing about both hands and just sharing from your heart and your story. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Huge thank you to JT for being on the show. It was incredible to hear his heart for the widow and the orphan. I'm sure that came through in listening to his voice. Be sure to check out everything he talked about at bothhands.org to see all that they're doing and how you can get involved. And thank you guys for listening. We will talk to you soon.